So let's begin. Let's begin. We're up to Perek Dalet. We learned yesterday the first two psukim. Mochemes Goy Gumogoy. We learned through the Rashi, the Mitzudos, the Radak, and the Malbim. Let's now take a look at the Midrashi Chazal on these two psukim. Pasuk B and Pasuk Beis. These are some long. On page 250, we Perek Dalet in Sefer Yoel, Perek Dalet, we did the first two psukim. We're now learning the Likutei Shas Umidrashe Hatanoim. Pasuk Beis on the bottom. The kibatzi es kol hagoyim aviharadetim el emek yehoshafat v'nishpati imam sham al ami v'nachalosi Yisrael. So this pasuk simply refers to Milchemes Goy Gumog, the times of Mashiach, before the coming of Mashiach, Milchemes Goy Gumog, Hashem is going to influence all of the nations to come to this location called Emek Yehoshafat. There is a location somewhere in Eretz Yisrael that's near, in the vicinity of Yerushalayim, called Emek Yehoshafat. And we had different perushims why it's called Emek Yehoshafat. Some learned that it was a place where Yehoshafat, he built, he established, he had some involvement in its existence, and therefore it's been named for posterity after Yehoshafat, and that's the location where this Milchama, where all the nations will gather, where the Milchemes Goy Gumog will be staged from. And some say the word Yehoshafat has absolutely nothing to do with Melech Yehoshafat. It has to do with, it means Ka Shofet. Hashem at this moment will judge. Ka means Hashem, and Ka we learned yesterday means the Midas Hadin. Hashem will judge Shofet the Umos Olam for what they have done to Klal Yisrael. Now, obviously, there has to be. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to go into this to research this, but there has to be a significance in. Forget about the fact that Yehoshafat, Melech Yehoshafat, he established. He did something. He built a building. He established. He developed it. Or it means Kosh Shofet. There has to be. It has to be that there's some significance in just in the Milchemes Goyg Umagog where it relates to the Melech Yehoshafat himself. I didn't get a chance, but I did notice that in the Art Scroll Blue edition, the English edition, it did discuss this very briefly, and it did mention I have to brush up on my Nach. Okay, unfortunately, I'm not very, very lazy. I have to Chazer Melochim. And learn, review all of the events of the time of Acha Melech Yehoshafat, but there is an event in the lifetime Yehoshafat where he brought the nations of the world, he brought different nations, Amoin and Moyav, Edom, he brought different nations to this, he brought them to a location, not necessarily this location, and he caused them to fight amongst themselves, not to fight against. He did something very clever where he instigated a war against themselves. A little bit about American history, if I'm not mistaken, maybe you know better than me, Reagan, in his era, the United States did something very similar to this with Iran and Iraq. They basically supported Iran and they supported Iraq, hoping that each of them would wipe out each other. What?
They lost a million people, but didn't seem to make a dent. They fought for 10 or 15 years.
And who's supporting both sides, hoping each one would eliminate each other. They would weaken each other to the degree they would not be a threat to the United States. If one of them would prevail, then either one of them couldn't be a threat to the United States. But if both of them would be at each other's throats, they wouldn't have the time, they wouldn't have the money, the effort, the energy to make trouble for the United States. So the American government, cleverly, you have to research this, to what degree it's true, but that's how, I remember my father used to tell this to me, is that the American government very secretly would basically support both of them, Iran and Iraq, hoping they would kill each other.
Yes, so, there's an expression, doesn't fight as that and begin.
What does that mean?
That both sides win.
Both sides should win. And that way they would leave the United States alone. That's exactly what Yehoshafat did in Sefer. Did it? I don't know. Did it really work? But
it wasn't so much America. It was America with Israel. supported opposite parties.
They supported both.
No, opposite.
No, I think they support the United States secretly supported both.
Supported Iran. He sold them weapons.
America gave Iraq chemical weapons, biological weapons. That's how they started. That's how they got biological weapons. Who gave them the biological weapons? The United States. The United States gave Iraq biological weapons in order to use it. They did. I think they did. You have to study. Look, Google it.
Google it. Killed Dr. Bull, who was the engineer who made that.
Long gun, the big gun.
Just recently.
It was very nasty. Whatever it was nasty. Over here, Yehoshaphat did the same thing. Yehoshaphat cleverly, I think, through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guidance, told him, bring together these nations in a clever way and cause them to wipe out each other.
The Ibn Ezra says something else. He says that they just, he named this place.
Right, we said that yesterday. Right. We said that yesterday. I began with that.
What does the Targum on the other side say?
Targum Yonason says, "Va'achanesh yas kol amamaya v'ach va'aches." I'm going to gather the nations. Va'aches sinun. I'm going to bring them down, l'meishar, to the valley pilug. Rashi called this to the valley of division, pilug dina, where they're going to be punished. It means nothing. It just means the distribution of judgment. The espera min hoyn tamon. I'm going to punish them al ami. My nation for what they've done to them. So it basically means Yoishav means Ko Shoifet. The Targum Rashi quoted this. This valley has nothing to do with Melech Yehoshaphat. Melech Yehoshaphat is not part of the equation. It's called Yehoshaphat Miloshen Ko Yudke, part of Hashem's name, Shoifet. Hashem will judge these nations at this moment in time. The other parishes, it's a location, and the location is called Yehoshaphat, because back in the day, this goes back to the beginning of the Malchus, pretty much towards the beginning of the Malchus of Klal Yisrael. David, Shlomo, Asa, David, Shlomo, Rechavam, Asa, and Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat lived at the time, he was the corresponding king to Melech Achav. Melech Achav was the king of Yisrael, and at that time was the king of Yehuda, was Melech Yehoshaphat. And that was one of the most difficult times in the history of Klal Yisrael, when Achav, he expanded the scope of Avodah Zarah. Yeravam just started a little bit, but Achav went way, way overboard in expanding the denial of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Avodah Zarah. And who was Zahu's tzaddik, Yehoshaphat, who did not stand for this, and he basically, there was a civil war. How dare you go and deny Hashem's existence and do what you're doing? Now, during his time, there was an important event where we brush up on our Nach, but he gathered together, Hashem told him to bring together, invite different nations to come to a certain location, and it was only for the purpose, not that they should fight against Klal Yisrael, it was just that they should fight against each other. There should be a world war between various nations, so that they should be weakened, and by being weakened, there's not going to be trouble for Klal Yisrael. So it's not, you can't ignore the fact that that pattern, that concept of nations, when nations are fighting against each other, they don't have time to make trouble for us, is exactly what's happening here in Milchemes Gog u'Magog, according to at least some of the commentators. Some of the commentators learn that the nations over here are coming to this place, Emek Yehoshaphat, this location, because they're going to war, the Achdus, against Klal Yisrael. They're coming to war. They're all joined together under one banner to go to war against Yerushalayim. And this location, Emek Yehoshaphat, is in the vicinity of Yerushalayim, and it's from here they're going to stage the war. Other commentators say no such thing. This war has nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. The nations of the world at this point in time are going to fight it out amongst themselves.
What about the other pasuk that talks about Al Yisrael, Al Hashem, the Al Mashiach?
Yeah, okay, there were different events. The time of Mashiach is a very complex time. It's not just going to be one event. There are many different things that are happening at the same time or in sequence. There are a lot of things that build up, all many pieces of the puzzle which come together at this point in time. So this particular pasuk, what is it referring to? It's extremely difficult. And you see from the wrong Mepharshim, there is no agreement exactly what is it. Because the truth is, we do not know. As the Rambam says, don't even try to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. You'll never succeed. No one knows how things are going to play out. But we do have different Nevi'im, and each Navi presents a different picture. The question is, are the pictures they present all exactly the same from a different angle, or are they different events? All different events which happen in sequence, which lead up to the ultimate end. We don't know. But over here, at least I want to try to show you, there are three different ideas in what it means here, the valley of Yehoshaphat. Rashi says the depth of judgment. The word Yehoshaphat, so the Targum says, the Pilug. Pilug means the distribution. It's not exactly Amic, the depth, but Pilug means the distribution, which basically means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now going to dispense punishment to the Umay Sa'olam. It's all it means. It's not. Now, other Mepharshim say, what does it mean, Yehoshaphat? It means it's a location. It's nothing more than a mokoim. Why is it called Yehoshaphat? That's a side issue, because it happened to be that back in the day, in the time of the king Yehoshaphat, maybe it was desert land, and he went and he invested, he gave money, he invested a real estate project to build apartments, a stable, a state-regulated, what's it called? Rent control. Rent control center for senior citizens. So in honor of the great Yehoshaphat, who provided social security for the people who lived in this town, they named it after Yehoshaphat. That's all it means. Nothing more than that. Or there's something deeper. There's something that it's called the Valley of Yehoshaphat to send us a message. What exactly is taking place in this moment, in this location? And that is, we have to understand what happened in the lifetime of Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat had a very rich life. A lot of events took place during his time. But one thing that did happen in his malchus was he orchestrated an event where the nations should fight against each other. Nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. Why would he want that to happen? It's not exactly clear, but simply, if the nations... Yes, it did. Yeah, it did. It did. We have to go back and study Malachim, but it did happen. And the reason why, and the simple reason why he would want it to happen is because when our enemies are busy fighting each other, they don't have. They're distracted. They don't have the presence of mind to make trouble for us. When everything is good by them, then they're looking for trouble. Who is the natural target for their need to make trouble? Klal Yisrael, halacha biyodeinu Esav soyde Yaakov. But when they're dealing with their own issues, they just don't have time to think about us. So this was an event that took place in the lifetime of Yehoshaphat. What? Or collateral damage, like the Crusades. And the Crusades didn't work in our favor. We were the collateral damage. The Esav was fighting with Yisrael, Christians versus the Muslims, jihad versus Crusade, and who was the collateral damage? Us. We were people living in Eretz Yisrael at that time that were mamish, tortured. They all collected, all the Jews. When the Christians arrived in the First Crusade, what was the first thing they did? They rounded up all of the Jews, they put them in the shul, they locked up the shul, and they burned down the shul. 500 Jews were incinerated in the Beis HaKnesses. And then anyone that escaped, that was not in the shul, they mamish hunted down anyone, any Jew that somehow was not part of the group that they're able to lock up in the shul and burn down. So who's the collateral damage? Us. And on the way, and what the First Crusade, the whole Germany, the 10,000 people, it was not exactly known how he were killed in the First Crusade, but as they marched from France to Yerushalayim, a whole group of them went down south to the Rhineland. Why are you going down to the Rhineland? That's not the way to go. So it's not the road. You're going off an exit sign. Mishagas, why should we kill the infidels in Yerushalayim when we have infidels amongst us? So we were the collateral damage, no question about it. So you're saying it's correct that sometimes we find when the goyim are fighting amongst themselves, we're the collateral damage. It's not good for us. But other times, it seems, in time of Yehoshaphat, that was not the issue. The issue was, indeed, if they're struggling with their own issues, they're not going to have the presence of mind to focus on us. Yehoshaphat was involved in such an event. And the lesson is, this is exactly, according to this approach, is what's happening over here. This over here, Hashem is going to cause all these nations to come to this location called Emek Yehoshaphat. Where this is, who knows? Maybe Emek Yehoshaphat is in South Africa. It's not necessarily in Yerushalayim. The reason why it's called Emek, the Valley of Yehoshaphat, is because the event that is taking place is exactly the same type of event which took place in the lifetime of Yehoshaphat. He was the orchestrator of the nations fighting against each other. So too, there's going to come a time now in those days where Hashem is going to gather nations. They're going to be taken down to this place called the Emek Yehoshaphat. Where is that? Is that in Eretz Yisrael? Well, if you learn it is. If you learn that it's just a place, and it was called after Yehoshaphat because he went and he instituted rent control, it wasn't Eretz Yisrael. But if you learn that, no, that's not the issue. The issue, Emek Yehoshaphat, is telling us the nature of what's taking place here. There's going to be a world war that has nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. And the reason why Hashem wants this to happen is because Hashem wants to punish them. Hashem wants them to be punished for their sins. But we're not involved. We're on the outside. And the way they're going to be punished, it's not going to be like Sodom. How was Sodom destroyed? They were eating lunch, and poof, a puff of smoke, mushroom cloud. They didn't know what hit them. The way the goyim are going to be punished, the most HaMashiach, is there's going to be a war, and they're going to be killed in the war when they fight against each other. And what does that do with us? This could take place at the other end of the world. Has nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. And according to that interpretation, Emek Yehoshaphat does not necessarily mean it's in Eretz Yisrael. It's in a place, wherever it is. It's called the Valley of Yehoshaphat, just to bring out the nature of what's taking place here. These are three different ideas as to why we have here the word Yehoshaphat.
I just like to add two things. Historically, this happened twice. In the Purim story, what Esther politically did was there were two great
excellent
Achashverosh and Haman. They both hated us. And what she did, what she
excellent,
one
superb.
Against the other. And I feel this also happened during World War II, when Hitler and Stalin, in the beginning of the war, they were together, and Hitler turned against Stalin, and ultimately it was the Russians who saved all the Allies. It was only when Hitler went against Stalin, and the two great Rishoyim, two people who hated
fighting
Hitler,
each other,
right? That was what saved the world.
Okay.
During the Six Day War. All the Arabs who hated each other.
They came together, exactly. It's like mida keneged mida. You're saying very, very good. That normally under, like you have, I also have that by Balak, Vayar Balak, Rashi, the beginning of Parashas, all the Yisoders are in Rashi. Rashi there says, what in the world is a Balak, a Moav, and Midian doing together? They hate each other. It was well known that these two nations were at war with each other. And all of a sudden, why are they buddy-buddy? Because they have a common
enemy.
My enemy. My enemy's enemy is my friend. Right? Or my friend's friend.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Like Israel, Saudi Arabia, and now have a corner.
So yeah, they had a common, so it's like Mida Keneged Mida. Over here Hashem is punishing them for the harm they've caused Klal Yisrael. What did they do to harm Klal Yisrael? They put aside their own issues and they had achdus. For what purpose? To harm Klal Yisrael. Mida keneged mida. How are you going to be destroyed? You won't put aside your personal issues. You'll fight it. You'll kill each other, and you'll both be wiped out. So you're saying, what you're saying about Purim is fantastic. It's exactly what Esther did. She played Haman against Achashverosh. And by playing Haman against Achashverosh, she distracted them from the one that they both hated. The common denominator between the two was the Jews. They both hated Klal Yisrael. And the way Esther was able to save Klal Yisrael was, instead of there being Achdus between our two enemies of Haman and Achashverosh, she played one against the other, made one jealous. Each one was jealous of the other. They were fighting amongst each other, and the male Klal Yisrael was saved. Excellent. So therefore, and also the story of Purim is really foreshadowing Yemos HaMashiach. It's foreshadowing Yemos HaMashiach, and that's exactly, to a degree, if you want to take the word Yehoshaphat and learn referring to like what it's what this event that happened in the time of Yehoshaphat, where he brought together, and there were three nations. There were three nations that he brought together to a location, and Hashem told him that we told him exactly what to do in order that they kill each other out and not fight with Klal Yisrael. So that's exactly what's the theme of the approach, the technique that's being employed here in Yemos HaMashiach, and that's why it's called the Valley of Yehoshaphat. And according to this pshat, the further away they are from Eretz Yisrael, the better. We don't need them. We don't want them there. We don't need them there. They can fight it out wherever they are, but don't come near Eretz Yisrael. Okay, let's go further. Now let's go back to the Midrash Chazal on page 250, the second wide line. The kibatzi, I'm going to gather as kol hagoyim b'horadatim b'leimek yehoshafat v'nishpati imam sham al ami v'nachalos Yisrael. Now he quotes the pasuk. It's a little bit long, but it will go through very quickly. He's going to the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. At the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, there was what was called the Anane, the Anan Ho'esh. At night, there was a fire that guided Klal Yisrael, Hashem, Hoylech, by day was the Anan Yakovoid, and at night was the Anan Ho'esh, the Hashem, Hoylech, Lefneim, Yoimam, Efshur, Loimar, Kain. Could it really be that Hashem is going in front of him? It says, so what does it mean that Hashem goes before them? Hashem is with them. It seems the question over here is, if he's saying that Hashem is going before them, that means that Hashem is not with them. That's not true. Hashem is everywhere. Hashem's honor, Hashem's presence is every mashu of this world. So my, what then does it mean that my tamalim of Hashem holich lefnehem yoimam amar Rabbi Avtoninus? Here is the mashal. Lemelech amar Avtoninus lemelech shehu don al habimo umachshach. Here is the story. The story is a mashal. A king is sitting in judgment, and it gets dark. It gets late. They're only supposed to work. You ever go for jury duty? 9 to 4? No, 10 to 4, 11 to 4. It's not much a joke. Who works only from 10 to 4? So
judges,
4 o'clock,
the judges.
Okay, so it's like what's the rush to leave? People there are used to working until 8, 9 o'clock at night. All of a sudden, okay, oh, it's 4 o'clock. We gotta get out of here. Wow, what a job, huh? 4 o'clock, it's over. What?
It's not Rabbi Antoninus. I don't care what.
What? Rabbi El Toninus?
He's speaking to Antoninus.
Omar Rebbe El Antoninus. Okay, fine. Rebbe said to Antoninus. Okay, you're right. Okay. So, and he asked the word Mushal. I think, all right, whatever. You're right. I don't know. We have to go look it up inside, whatever it is. Lemelech Shehudon Alabima Umachshech. So there's a king that's sitting in judgment. And they're really supposed to end their work at 5 o'clock. But they go overtime. They go overtime and they're sitting in court. It's already 11 o'clock at night. And no one leaves. No one leaves the courtroom until the judge says you can go home. All the lawyers, all the litigants, and all the secretaries, everyone is there. It gets very, very dark. And all of the people in the court, they aren't going nowhere. They're sitting there in court the whole day because that's the rule. Achar shenifta min habima. When the judge, he steps down from the kisei of mishpat, so it's dark outside. So how are you going to go home in the dark? Those days there were no electricity. How are you going to go home in the dark? You need a lantern. So where are you going to get a lantern? So you would expect the king to say, listen, it's dark. Everyone go outside, and my secretary has prepared flashlights for everyone here to walk home at night. Instead of the king telling the people go to the secretary for the flashlights, the king himself takes the people with him and he takes everyone home. Come in my car, I have flashlights on my car, and he takes everyone personally home. Achar shnifta min abimu hu hoyu noitles ha-panos. Panos means a lantern. Umeir lebanav, and he lights the way for the people. So the other kings that were sitting there, they were in shock. It's not lefi kivodai. It's not lefi the kavod of the king to actually take the lantern and guide the people.
Anu
Who I married, so they say to him, no, we'll do it for you. You don't have to do this. We'll do it for you. It's not lefi kavoidcha that you should have to do this. V'oiban, he says, loy mibnesh ein li mi sheyito lesapanos v'yo lebonai, elo hareni modia lochem chibosom shel bonai shetiyu noyhagi mimoyim b'chavod. So he says to the people, listen, I have plenty of secretaries. I have a whole staff. I have on my payroll, I have lackeys. I have enough people here to go and take everyone and carry everyone home themselves. But I, bedafka, do not want to go and tell my secretaries and my people to do this because I want to give my people honor. I want to give my bonai, my I guess the people that are a part of my team, I want to be mechabe them. I myself want to take them home in my car with my light, guide them home. Honor. What? Moshe Rabbeinu, exactly. Moshe Rabbeinu, he had many people to go guard. He himself went out to greet. He served. He was the waiter. Moshe Rabbeinu was the waiter when Yisro came. I go to yeshiva, I daven, so they make the kiddush. So who puts out the food on the table? Who sets up? The boys themselves. They go, they put the tables together, and they go, like even the choshva guys, they go into the kitchen, they come out with trays. You know, the gaboy, the choshva people, they come out with trays like waiters, they put out the food. There's no covet for the kiddush. So there's once you're a big Rosh Hashiva, heavy duty, major league Rosh Hashiva, and he was there for a simcha. And he was sitting there and he saw davening was over, and he saw the boys put together tables themselves, and the boys themselves go into the kitchen and they bring out the food, they put on aprons and they bring out the food, and everyone sits together, have a good time. And he says, this is what's missing in my yeshiva. In my yeshiva, it's not lefi kvoidoi, the choshva boys, to go into the kitchen and to go and set up the kiddush by the
waiting to be served.
By my yeshiva, davening is over and they have to have goyim, you know, they have other people. Has to, what?
Didn't that the old school sit in the yeshiva world that the choshva people?
Yes, exactly. It was a cover. It's an honor to have the zuchus of mopping the floors. Mopping the floors and putting away the svarim and taking care where you're going to hire a guy to go do this. What kind of Tam Shabbos is that? So he said to me, this is so beautiful, what I see in front of me. And my yeshiva is exactly what's missing. That the boys wouldn't do it. The boys he wouldn't do it. He says, I see, this is what's missing. This is the way it's supposed to be. That the boys themselves should, you do it yourself. You know, it's a certain cover, it's a certain dignity, it's a certain... certain covet.
That kind of thought has to start from.
What? Of course it has to start from the top. Of course. Well, he probably inherited a yeshiva. It's not even his yeshiva. No, you know, it's like a... it's like, you know, it goes down. Whatever it is. I'm not here to... No, on the other hand, you know, there's something called dignity. You know, you have to balance it. There has to be a balance. You know, it's not, and everything has a time and a place. Everything. There is something also to dignity. You can't use
it.
It's more Hamish.
Yeah.
More Hamish. Okay, whatever it is, it is. It is what it is. I'm not telling you that where I dive and every single person is going to do this. You know, not everyone.
No,
not everyone.
His wife will kill him.
No. Yeah, the wives don't come. What?
No, I mean, I've seen it.
So you saw, right? You were there. You know what I'm talking about. So over here, the king says, hey, I have plenty of people on my staff, and I'm doing it myself. So why? I want to give my people kavod. So that is exactly what it means. V'Hashem hoylech lifneihem. So I think we can appreciate the question better. I didn't understand the question. Now I understand the question. The question was, what do you mean V'Hashem hoylech lifneihem? Hashem has plenty of malachim. Hashem has plenty of servants that can do the job of guide the people out of Israel. Hashem has to be the one himself that's going to lead the way. What? Oh, exactly. So the Targum says, Hashem is giving kavod to Klal Yisrael. Look, he's saying, Rosh Hashanah, v'chein kavod le'amecha. We ask Hashem to give kavod le'amecha. We actually demand it. On the front page of all the papers, the media, the shocking news that Hashem himself is guiding his people out of Egypt with the Anane HaKavod and the Anan HaEsh. And I know that also gives a whole new element, dimension to Sukkos. What is Sukkos? The Anane HaKavod. Why are they called the Anane HaKavod? Maybe because of what is covered. A Zehu Mechubad HaMechaved. A person that's willing to bend down and be mechaved someone else. The Ribbono Shel Olam, it's his Shechina. The Anani HaKavod is the Shechina of Hashem. And Hashem is doing it. He was mechabed us. He gave us kavod. He showed us chiba. V'loy dayon. She'einam nechagim b'mohem b'kavod. Not only am I going to give them kavod, Elo Hashem enisim oysam misos chamuros. Now when it comes to goyim, but when this is true, when it comes to Klali Yisrael, but when it comes to the goyim, not only does Hashem not give the goyim kavod, v'loy dayin she'inim not giving them the goyim kavod, Elo Hashem emisim oysam misos chamuros mishunoi zu mizo. When it comes to, I think there are missing words here. There's something very cryptic about this. This doesn't flow together. When it comes to the goyim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only does he not give them kavod, he can be punished them severely for their sins. Le'inyin kein hu oimer.
The
Zoyin. And that is, how do you know this? What's the source for this? That the goyim is the opposite, the pasuk that we have just learned. V'kibatzti eskol ha-goyim v'hoiradetim al imek yehoshafat v'nishpatati shimohim sham al ami v'nachalosi Yisrael asher pizhu ba-goyim v'yes arzi chileku. The Ferish pasuk, this our pasuk over there. Yochol al avadazor v'al gilirayis v'al shichas tamim. Why is Hashem punishing the nations? Maybe it's because of the big three? No. So here's another very critical thing which the Chazal emphasized. If not for this Chazal, I really appreciate this. The punishment at this moment in time is not for Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. The punishment is for the way they have treated us throughout world history. Talmud Loimar al Ami v'nachalosi Yisrael. That's what the punishment is here for. Their hanhaga, the way they deal with us. That's a very powerful lesson, because we know it all. We know how true this is, especially today with the United Nations and all these nasty resolutions and BDS, the chutzpah. What? No, not really. You know, always join along. Always the liberals will always join the bandwagon. But it's the Makar is not being Jews. BDS, the despicable movement. And there's a dime a dozen movements like this. People who, and this deserves a special mishpat. It's not going to be part of the just one big din. Oh, this one din, the goyim did this, and he also did this. No, this attitude of hatred and mistreatment of Klal Yisrael will get its own mishpat, a separate mishpat just for this alone. When you hear in the media something like this, you should know, don't worry, the day of reckoning is coming for them. V'yoymer, Mitzrayim, another example, and now we're going to other psukim in Tanakh. Mitzrayim, well, this is later on, we're going to come to this soon. Mitzrayim l'shmama siyeh, Egypt will also be desolate. V'edoim, and Edoim l'midbar shmama tiyeh will be a desert. Machmas, because mechamas, due to the violence that the goyim have poured out, b'nei mechamas b'nei Yehuda, asher shavchu damnoki bi'artzam, due to the violence that the goyim have done to the b'nei Yehuda, they've poured the blood of the b'nei Yehuda in their land. B'oysa shah, at that time, the Yehuda li'oylam teishev yishlaim l'dor, that's going to be times of Mashiach. V'oymer v'nikesi damam lo nikesi, will I not avenge their blood? I certainly will. The Hashem Shoichin B'tzion. Okay, so that is the theme of this pasuk, to emphasize the special Yoyim Hadin for their attitude, their treatment. Next, Maimer Chazal. Arba'o Nikru Nachala. There are four different items in this world that are called an inheritance, a Nachala. Number one is the Beis HaMikdash. Nikru Nachala Shnemar Bahar Nachaloscha. Eretz Yisrael Nikreis Nachala Shnemar. It says, "Ba'aretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosen Lecha Nachala, v'chein haTorah Nikreis Nachala Shnemar u'mimatana Nachaliyah v'matana." To Nachaliyah, Chazal learn that the word Nachaliyah there refers to the Torah. Hashem gave, the Torah was given b'matana as a gift to Klal Yisrael, and it's called Nachaliel Miloshon Nachala, which really means a contradiction. A gift is not a Nachala. If it's a Nachala, Nachala means an inheritance. It's not a gift. It's rightfully yours. A Matana is nothing to do with you. It's just a windfall. So whatever this means, it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the gift that Torah will be a Nachala. V'chein Yisrael, and the fourth ayin that's called the Nachala, Hashem's Nachala is, Nachala Shnemar, that's the pasuk over here. The pasuk, Ani v'nachalasi Yisrael, Omar Kadosh Baruch Hu Yovo Yisrael. So what's the significance of these four items? This almost sounds like a Bala Turin. Sounds like here it's a Medrash.
Well, a word frequency.
What?
Balaturim is big into word frequency.
Word frequency. So it's exactly what he's doing over here. The
small frequency.
He borrows from this Medrash. And what's the significance? We group all four together. Why do we group all four together? Mr. Cohen, you see here? Okay, he comes in.
Yeah.
Mr. Cohen, my thing is blinking, which means the battery is about to go. Can you give me two AA batteries? So, what's the Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu? Yava Yisrael, Shenikru Nachala, Le'eretz Yisrael, Shenikres Nachala, V'yivnu Beis Hamigdash, Shenikres Nachala, Bezuchus HaToyra, Shenikres Nachala, Lekach Nemar, that's why it says here, Behar Nachala. So all of these four go together. Change batteries. I should cry out from the garbage. Okay, thank you very much.
Please, thank you.
I should cry out. All right, still works. Okay, so this is the meaning, the four nachlas. Now, how do you reconcile this with the famous Chazal that says there are three that go together? Yisrael, V'oyraisa, V'kudshe brichu, Chadhu. So there we have Yisrael and the Torah and Hashem and the Ribbono Shel Olam. In this Chazal, we've taken out Hashem. Hashem is removed from the picture, and we replaced it with Eretz Yisrael and the Beis Hamikdash. And therefore, these four all go together. Klal Yisrael will come to Eretz Yisrael, build the Beis Hamikdash in the Zuchus of the Torah, which is also called the Nachala. Okay, leave it with that. Now, let's now move forward to the next pasuk. Next pasuk says, let's put the pasuk together, pasuk Gimel, the El Ani, Yadu Goyrol. Now, here we are describing the sins. We are describing now the sins of the Umay, Sa'ilam, in the times of history. What exactly, we're illustrating their evil behavior. How, this is like a summary. It's a summary of what they've done to us. They've cast lots. A goyro. When you cast a lot, what does it mean? What does it mean in essence? You have no value. When you cast a lot, everything is the same. Everything, because if something is unique, something is special, it has a place, a time. It's obvious what its purpose is. But when you cast lots, you're basically saying, everything is exactly the same. Sometimes we have everything exactly the same, and therefore we're just going to cast a lot. So that's how that's their attitude in this world. We're just, and also a lottery is what is a lottery? It's chance. It's chance. It's just a coincidence. It doesn't have any real meaning. I mean, at least to an observer. But value, but we know that in this world there's nothing that has that doesn't have a significance. And Adarabba on Yom Kippurim, the avoida of Yom Kippur was done through a goyrol. The division of Eretz Yisrael was done through a goyrol. Purim, the Purim miracle, was done through a goyrol. So when we look at a goyrol, Adarabba, we give the goyrol the ultimate significance to say to Hashem, even in what appears to be something that has no significance, there is the Yad Hashem. The Goyim, just the opposite. The Goyim look at a Goyim as saying it's just a coincidence, it has absolutely no significance. So you have Goyim is a very powerful concept because the Goyim represents the extreme difference between Klal Yisrael and the Umay Yisrael. When Klal Yisrael looks at a Goyim, what do they say? They say the Yad Hashem. It's not chance. The determinism of how it plays out. It's not randomness. When the goy looks at a goy roll, he says, "Oh, it's nothing, zero." In order for something to have significance, there has to be open miracles. Open miracles, then maybe I'll appreciate there's some significance. So the goy roll is something which really it draws the line. It's mavdil between Klal Yisrael and the Umay Sa'ila. So here we're using the theme of the goy roll. And we there's a Pshushal Mikra, but the fact that we're even using the girl right opens up a whole line of thought of this is a sick approach that the Umay Sa'olam have against us, that we're nothing special. Everything that we have accomplished, everything that we have, our survival, it's not a miracle. It's just chance. It can be explained al derech hateva. It's where the dice falls. Yeah. Chance happened to meet you on the road. The whole essence of Amalek is chance. Exactly. Korcha is chance. So this is the dividing line between us and the Umay Sa'ilam. Their attitude in the world history against us is Jews. Everything you have, you've accomplished is nothing more than Asher Korcha. It was a chance event. It's like a goyrol. That now here in the Pshutzal Mikra, it's telling us exactly their very particular sin. V'al am yadu goyrol v'yidu hayelad ba'zoyna v'hayalda mochu v'yayin v'yishu. This simply means that when the goyim would be captured, when this event took place, is not clear. Is it referring to the Bayis Rishon, the Chur Bayis Rishon, the Bayis Sheni? Is it referring to a nevuah for history? They would abuse the Jewish children. They would capture them, they would steal them, they would kidnap them, and they would have a collection of children, and they would give a woman payment for her services of znus. How would they pay her? By giving her a child. A woman wants a child, so they say, oh, you want a child? So you know what? Be mezane with me, be satisfy my taivais, and I'll. What do you want? You want a baby? So yeah, here's a baby, I'll give you a Jewish child I captured, I stole, I kidnapped a Jewish child. What about a young girl? A young girl for wine. They want to go into a bar. They want some alcohol. So how are we going to pay? We're low on cash. We'll give you a slave. We'll give you a little girl. We'll be a slave. Now, which one we have locked up in the dungeon? 50 girls and 50 boys. Which one will we give? Will we give you? We'll cast lots. We'll just random. Whichever one comes up, that's the one we'll give you for the payment for znus. And that's the girl we'll give you the payment for the alcohol. That's the pshutoi shel mikra. Now, by the way, I translate the word zoyna as a reference to znus, from the gili arayos. Some of the commentators will see in a few moments, they translate the word zona, loshon of mazon, for
like
food. For food. Yeah. For food.
Also the same thing. The
some
food
say,
yeah.
What does it mean? Food. And therefore, that the parallel is much better. The boys were given for solid foods, and the girls were given for drink. Okay, there's more of a parallel. Okay, whatever it means, it means. Let's go further. The Pasuk Dal, V'gam Mo'atem Li. Now we go to another theme. And this, let's first do Pasuk Gimel inside, because the Pasuk Dal is an entirely new theme. Pasuk Gimel in the Mitzudos David. In the Mitzudos David on the page 252 towards the bottom. Pasuk Yadu Goyrol, Mi Mehem Limi, Bazoina. So Mitzudos says, Zoina refers, Bishar Zoina Be'es Nana. Gili Arayos. Like an esnan zon, esnan means the hire of the zona. A man gives a woman payment for her services. Bayayin, b'mechir yayin. Rashi, yadu garol, yash. The word yadu is an unusual word. We're familiar with this. It means to cast, to throw down. When they would cast lots, it involved throwing things on the floor. What was the ancient technique of casting lots? Today, they spin the ball, right? You ever watch late night television, right? They turn the ball, and one of those things, the lottery comes out. But in ancient times, they had other techniques where whatever. I'm not clear. I once read about this. I don't know what it
like
means.
Dice,
exactly.
Dice. Sort of like a
they throw things down on the ground. Yashli kamo vayadu evan bide. He casts down a stone upon me. Yidu elecha. The target. Another pasuk that says there. Yidu elecha, which means to cast down. Okay, let's see the Radak. Pasuk Gimel Vilami. Vilami kmo vial. El means to like upon. V'chein vayach esap. Okay, the esap literally this many times. Yadu goral. Next words. Hoyu mashlichim goral b'neim al yishol zeye shalchav zeye shali. Casting yadu mishpatot yiyadu min liadois es hakironos hagoyim. I'm not sure what that means. V'bnei pigisha shnei hayudin. Okay, he goes into some grammar. We'll leave that. Bazoina b'schar hazoina. Now the Ibn Ezra, just to see what he says with the word zoina. What does he say with the word zoina? He doesn't comment. He does say bavur znus. He says hayisrael b'mechir zoin bavur znus. Okay, let's see the Malbim. Malbim pasuk gimel v'ilami bei masha hechziku gam begufam kicking in kesef vayadu goyro lalehem mi kochem le'evin v'shifra v'hayu niklim beineim kol kach ad. They were the Jews were so low in the eyes of the goyim at shenasnu es hayeled bazoina. If a Jew had a boy or a girl, a child, the guy would kidnap the children and use the child as payment for so who here, I didn't find yet a makor that it means food. Let's see over here. Where is
you know, when you talk about casting laws, but I think what you're talking about dehumanizing of people, like, well,
you're just a number.
You're just a number. Like a
number.
Nazis.
You're just a number. There's nothing more than a number. Like, we still right. Okay, there's another idea. Besides the fact, Korcha, a lie represents all of your success is just chance. It also means to dehumanize. A person, a Jew, is nothing more than a number. And that's the theme of a lot. Now, here, Rabbi Eliezer, Mibozhan C. Says bazoina lefi in yonoi ma zoin, food, food does not mean zoin. It parallels. It fits better in the pshat the pasuk. Okay, look at the likutei shas.
Why does it fit better?
Because it's a parallel to drink. The yeled was given for payment for znus, and the yalda was given for wine. What's the connection between the two? So one of the farshim, I saw this.
Commodities.
I saw what?
They're commodities.
Right, okay, so two different commodities. I did see one of the...
The children are the commodities.
Right. But why is a boy set aside its payment for znus, and a girl set aside its payment for alcohol? Okay, I did see one of the commentators say...
It could be the other way. It could be alcohol as a payment for znus also.
No, but it doesn't say that in the pasuk. It says in the pasuk, Vayidu hayeled. The boy was given by zoyna, v'hayaldo mahu v'yayin v'yishtu. I did see a commentator say is that we're now referring to stam alcohol. We're referring to the alcohol that is served when the man is mezane with this woman. When this man was mezane with this woman, in order to enhance his pleasure, they would drink alcohol. So when he came to be mezane with the woman, he had to first buy the woman, and they had to buy alcohol. So therefore, the two indeed are going together. It's not just stam, you buy alcohol, you know, you have in the refrigerator, you have some beer. You have in the basement a collection of beer. No, we're dealing over here. They go together. And look at the Likutei Shas in the bottom, one Chazal. This Chazal, I think we know this, we heard this Chazal because the beginning of the Masechta, you have to get in. Bottom, Likutei Shas, Vayidnu, page 252, Vayidnu, Vayal, Vazon, Vayalda, Machu, Vayal, Vayishtu. Shalach le Rabbi Avyasol Rabbi Yehuda Bnei Adam Ha'olim Mishamul Bavel Lekan Leiris Yisrael Lil Moy Torah. Look what he says over here. People who leave their family in Bavel and they come to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah, they're doing Shaloi Kedin, because there's a time in life when you have to make a parnasa and focus on your children at the expense of your learning and your spiritual advancement. Those people who abandon their families in Bavel and they come to Eretz Yisrael, hein, these people, kimu bi'atzman, vayidnu hayeled bazoina, vahayalda machu vayayin vayishtu. So what is that? Over here, he injects over here in the brackets a perush, which is only one of many perushim, and he learns over here is that by leaving their wives, they're not having children. Because they're not there, they could have had more children. If they would have stayed home, been with their wives, statistically speaking, they would have had more children. And now when they've abandoned their wives to come to Eretz Yisrael to spend time learning, they're having less children. So in the people who do this, it's in their eyes, having children is not so important. It's not the priority one. Priority one is they should be Talmidei Chachamim. Oh, it's also a good thing to have children. It's also good to have children. Yes, same exact thing. Exactly the same. You get an extension out of this. So this, the Chazal criticize, in their eyes, a child is nothing. It's you can even take your child and sell it to a Zayna and sell it for wine. Figuratively speaking, that the people who spend too much time learning and not having a family and having children and preparing for the next generation, they have fulfilled in themselves what it says in this pasuk. They don't care. Now that's one parish. That's one parish. Another parish is not what it says in the brackets. Is that no? These people, they've already had enough. They've already had 15 children. How many children can you have already? You have 15 children. Okay, that's it. They're done. And now I have 15 children. I can't take it. I can't be home with 15 kids. So you know what? Tell your wife, I'm going away for 2 years to Eretz Yisrael to sit and learn. If you're not going to be home, what kind of chinuch are your children going to have? They'll be weeds. They'll just grow up in the wild. There'll be no discipline. There'll be nothing. I remember I once went to a doctor. There was an African-American there. I thought of her as a very, very lowly person. Okay, not nice to say. I didn't think very much of this person who was taking the appointments. And she, I don't know, she started talking to me. She said to me, she asked me some personal questions. If I'm married, if I have children, this, that. I said, she said that she has children. She said to me, her mother always told her, it's the easiest thing to have a child, but it's the hardest thing in the world to raise a child. And my whole opinion never changed. It's not so easy to have children either. Okay, it's not so easy to have children either, but maybe for her it is. But that's right. That's right. It's an interesting concept. What she said is that to have the child, you know, if you're married, you know, so you have the child. You have just whatever it is. But to raise the child, your whole life, the chinuch habanim, what it involves, the effort, the expense, the amelus, it's the hardest thing in the world. The easiest thing to have a child, the hardest thing to raise a child. So the people over here, they quit. This is what the Gemara says, they quit. They had the children. They have 12, 15 children, and now they quit. Wife, it's your problem. Rebbeim, it's your problem. Society, it's your problem. I'm out of here. I'm going to make aliyah. I'm going to go to the Beis Medrash, sit and learn the whole day. Don't tell me what my children are doing. It's 10 a.m. Do you know where your children are? Okay, that's the Musar Haskel today. I saw one of these books. I think I pair Farakos. It used to be in the olden days. We all know. You see, he's not embarrassed to say this. It's a big Rosh Hashiva today. I pair in Far Rockaway. Remember those days we used to watch television? We would all see it's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? It says Rachmana Litzlan. Today, in our generation, that's not the question. The question is, it's 10 a.m. Do you know where your children are? Because some of the problems in society are so great, in 10 a.m. you don't know what's going on. So, whatever, they're gone, whatever. It's a lot of musr. The biggest musr, like I told you, is that he's able to admit that he's watching television. He even knows. He's a big Rosh Hashiva at Paris, a big, big, big Rosh Hashiva in Far Rockaway. And he says that it's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? So what does that mean? He means he was watching television just like me.
Just
right?
The news.
What?
Just the news.
Oh, yeah, just the news. Right. Come on. What?
Just the news.
So that's exactly what it's saying over here is that these people that are not raising their children properly, they're not investing in the chinuch habanim, which comes at great personal expense. If you're really raising your children, you're not going to the Daf Yomi. You're staying at home with them, and you're doing homework, and you're mechanech them. It's a different. You can see instantly. You see people. My mother used to tell this to me. You see, there's certain people. You see how they behave, and right away you know they had a chinuch. And you watch a person for 5 minutes. They're a weed. No one raised them. Parents had them, and the parents were not involved at all. Not necessarily to the fault of the parents. Parnasa, they had nothing to eat. They have to go work. They're working, just to have enough money to pay the rent, to have food on the table. Okay, you can't blame everyone. But unfortunately, if there's no one disciplining the children, discipline, I mean, mechanic children, it's just a whole different world. I always notice in shul, when I go to shul, they have a big chair there, a very big chair and a shtender. And this chair is the property, whatever, but from a very chashuv person. He's humongous. He's a very, very humongous person. And he's not a young person. He has a very hard time with a lot of things in his health. He needs a chair. So they have there in the shul this nice, big, fancy chair for him. The rabbi has a regular chair. The rabbi sits on the same chair everyone else sits in tonight. And he has a big, humongous chair. And comes Ma'ariv. And it's always very interesting to see who sits in that chair. Sometimes there are certain people, they wouldn't even have a havanina. A havamina, it's a big, it's very tempting, right? It's a very tempting, oh, what a comfortable chair. And it's not the rabbi's chair. It's on the side of the shul. It's on the side. It's not the rabbi's chair. It just happens to be there. It's very interesting. So it's very tempting to sit down, have a good time, enjoy yourself. And there are certain people, they wouldn't even have a havamina. There's a special chair here and a special shtender. Obviously, it's for a very important person and not me. It's not my chair. I shouldn't give in to the Yetzirah. And then there are people that have no problem. They see it, they sit down, and they lean over, they have a good time. And it's a very big statement of, like, who you are.
At the shul, they'll ask, is anyone sitting here? Meaning, is anyone smoking?
That's a regular seat, right? That's another idea, a regular seat, right? That's one thing. But this is a whole different, it's a whole different league of, like, and you actually see, and I already noticed, is that the people, especially, you have a small, like, children or like, yeah, children or people like young, like adolescents, and like you right away see this person did not have a chinuch. No one raised him. He lives in the wild, and that's why he just does all these things. And then you have a person that's more refined, and you know their parents, and the parents are very, you know, they're people who have disciplined their children. They never told their child not to sit in this chair, but the whole chinuch automatically just overflows, it creates a whole sense, you don't sit here.
What's the mind is the mind, what's the deal?
It's a whole different, and it's not because the parents told them don't sit in this chair, it's the whole chinuch, it's a different chinuch, and the male, it's pashut, you don't sit in this chair. None of my business. Who sits here, maybe just, until you know what the story is, you just don't do it. And it speaks volumes. And here this pasuk is very, very frightening. People, this ability to produce children comes at a very great expense. Not just money. You give up a degree of your spirituality. People, they're leaving Eretz Yisrael, they're going to Eretz Yisrael to sin, to be denemi, ziv hashchina. And the pasuk says, you know, you think you're doing your tzaddik. You come to the Beis Medrash to learn. You know what you've just done? You've just done the Al Ami Yadu Goyal. You've mekayman yourself. Vayidnu hayelad bazoin vahayalda machu vayayin. What's with your children back in Bavel? Who's raising them? No one. Hefkerus. So it's like you gave them away. If it's nus, you gave them away. You don't show any value in raising your children. It's incredible Musar Haskell in this pasuk. Unfortunately, not everyone, unfortunately, has. Today we live in such a complicated world where people need parnasa and there are so many tirdas. You know, you can't judge anyone.
With Rabbi Akiva, it must have been, it's only because he had the tremendous support.
What's the pshat? It's a very good kasha.
I think his wife.
His wife said
she wanted it. And she undertook all the responsibility. And
but it's still a single mother. You're right. The answer is an excellent answer. There's no question about it. No question about that. She had the yecholas to raise the children 100%, but there's something to having a father also.
Yeah.
Okay. That we once gave a whole shiur on this. Is what's today? Today there's a whole movement area. There are, unfortunately, Rachmana Litzlan, there are singles that cannot find shidduchim, and they desperately want children, and they have in vitro. They have in vitro, and the question is, is it halachically valid? Can you do such a thing? So that's a whole separate issue. Big machloikis apoiskim. Let's make believe. Okay, I'm not going there. Make believe it's mutter. Make believe al pi halacha is a mutter. Mm-hmm. Now enters phase two. Hashkafically, is it the right thing to do? So we read this in headlines. Lichtenstein. We won't spend the whole shiur on this. So one of the arguments the Gedolei Yisrael make, and they're very against this, those that are, those who are on the team who put aside halacha, which is an issue, put aside halacha, focus on hashkafa, their words are very powerful words. It is forbidden lechatchila to produce in this world yisoymin. It's a big enough tragedy in this world, rachmana litzlan, when a child loses a parent. A child who's missing one parent is called a yosoy. So you're telling me that lechatchila, what? Okay, in a chanami, you're doing it because you want to have a child. But what about this child? The child's not going to have a father.
I'm going to learn because I want to learn.
What about my child? Who's going to raise the child? Exactly, of course it's selfish, of course. But what's going to be your lechatchila putting into this world a yosayim? Your lechatchila putting into this world a child that will not have a father? So they argue back. That was the whole debate. Yeah, this is a late night with Soy Shabbos radio, right? So some will say no. Today there's enough services
so can
out
have
there.
Children, if you won't be able to support them,
that's also a hashkafic question. That's also a very tough question. All of these, there's no resolution. Every gadol will tell you a different story. There's different hashkafa. But this is a very powerful point. Is that the Kamat, he brings down there, when he interviewed all the Rabbanim on the radio, the all Kamat said the same thing. It is usur to bring into this world lechatchila a yosim. What's the counter argument? They're not a yosim. Today we have a society where some of the children who don't have fathers have more love, more money, more opportunities than children who don't have a father. Now, is that a valid argument? Yes or no? I don't know. Yes or no? One thing I can tell you, I think is very, very true. I think is there's nothing like having a real father. Why? I saw this myself. Is when you have there's one thing that parents give that there's no replacement, no matter what. No matter what they have in this world, and that is someone who is their fan. Like a baseball game, you have fans, someone rooting for you. If you, the Rachmana Litzlan, is a child that doesn't have parents, or doesn't even have a mother or a father, and society has given him everything you can possibly want or need 10 times over, there's one thing they cannot give him. They cannot give him someone who is rooting for him, who's clapping there in the stadium, soccer, right? You take your kid to soccer, the classic example, and there are your parent there, a soccer mom. So I don't know what the equivalent of a father is. Someone who roots for you. You have hana when your child succeeds, they have nachas. And if your child fails, they have real agvas nefesh. And that sense is felt by a child, or even by an adult, someone who's 70 years old, as a father, that's 95 years old. When the child succeeds, the 95-year-old has real nachas. And that nachas is sensed by the 70-year-old. And when they have a trouble, the tsar, this real tsar, in that sense, you cannot artificially manufacture such a mitzvah. No matter how much money, you can buy with money a sonei betzah. But you can't buy with money a parent. Impossible. So that's the argument. Mitzad echad, you have to always take into consideration the tzar of the woman. The woman, she wants a child. It's not fair. If I'm not going to have a child now, I'm not going to ever have a child. So let me have a child. If according to halacha, it's mutter, you can't tell a person hashkafa. It's not shaykh to go force upon a person, you have to follow this hashkafa. You can't, no such thing. There are many hashkafas in this world. They're all legitimate. It's not your hashkafa, so it's not your hashkafa. Mind your own business. You're a sat mechassid. Don't impose your hashkafas upon someone else. Everyone has their hashkafas. So I have a woman who says, I want to have a child. It's not going to happen the normal way. I want to have a child. Is it mutter or aser? She has her paiskin that it's mutter. Hashkafically, so that's a very tough thing to deal with. And so what are you going to tell her? It's so wrong. You're bringing into this world a yosin. And that's hashkafically corrupt. So she'll tell you back, He'll have everything. I have enough money put away for him. There's nothing he will not have. He'll have a lot more than the average person. But he's not going to have a real father that's going to be rooting for him. How much of a factor is that in this decision? And to that, you know, there's no answer. You can't really. In Eretz Yisrael, there's a whole community of these people. There's mamish, a community of these people, and they have rabbonim that mamish oversee everything they do, and it's a very controversial thing. Obviously, it's a very controversial thing. It's a very sad, it's a very painful thing. It's a painful thing that society, there are people that cannot find happiness, you know, in the normal way. It's a very frightening thing. With that good note, we'll stop.
One more yard site today.
One more?
This is the first one. Esther,
the 31. Well, he knows everything.